Reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Panchalila 1, text 81.
Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Jaita Chanda Jai Gopala Vrinda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
The curtain up. No, just lift the whole curtain up on the top. No, a little bit low, and then you just stretch it out.
Pressure?
Yes. It was there last time. A little technical difficulty here.
Just excuse me.
What happens is I'm in Kentucky, and there's this red cardinal who used to live in this house for many years as an old man. And then he died, and then he took birth as a red cardinal. He's constantly trying to get into the house. Shastra, it's just like that bird outside your house that comes every year. Okay, so we're just kind of fixing it. We'll just leave the window open and look at me here. I'll be in the corner. And try not to look at the bird.
Gopal, come, Pat. I need to start. Hema Kali Prabhu Aila Tahare Milite Shali Shloka Deka Prabhu Nagina Pandite.
Okay. At that time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there to meet him. And when he saw the leaf pushed into the roof and saw the verse, he began to read it. Om Jnana Tavarandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Taksurum Lutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Amado Vishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Bhuta Kadamayam Kadati Sa Kadantikam. Adhadanas charandante idanya che kunapuna Srimadrupa padambhocha Dirisham janya janyani Panchakalpa tarivyascha Kripa sindhu vayedhucha Patitanam bhaganebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadha, Sri Vasari Gaurava Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Kentucky. My first realization this morning was I no longer have doubts why Prabhupada said that overpopulation is a myth. There's so much land and so few people living. Another challenge we have here is they have a beautiful house at Charan Chandra Kirti and Vajiraja. You do need to put that on here. So what happened is I'm giving class sitting on a bed in the room upstairs, and Guru P. Kandira, Jai Shri, and Gopa are here. So I'm sitting on the bed, and it's facing a window, and there's this red cardinal who constantly tries to get hit. So he's doing these kamikaze things against the window, which is distracting from our class. You can imagine how distracting that is, you know, especially for someone like me. I don't see the audience. I really have to concentrate to give class. And, but we put up the window and we'll see how that works. Okay, let's just let him dangle away. And anyway, I'm here because I admire what's being done. Charitamrita has read Prabhupada's books and his Prabhupada's books, the Bhagavatam itself. It's very clear that an important part of executing spiritual life is the environment in which you're in, and the economic situation that you're in, and the social situation that you're in. It's not the ultimate practice in spiritual life, but so much is written about it, about simple life and high living. And you can actually see what a visionary Prabhupada was. I remember when I was going to the Revivals with Raghunath, talking to him about a possible retreat center. And Raghunath gave an impassioned speech. He said when Prabhupada came in the 60s, he was like cutting edge on everything. Indian philosophy, vegetarianism, you know, simple living. You know, and he said, and so many people have appropriated that. Not appropriated, but taken it up. And how we are you know indebted to Prabhupada and to fulfill his legacy. And I was just over it's just so interesting. I don't know what Krishna is doing, but you know it's just kind of interesting. See, I think Charachandra picked out Kentucky because of the weather. You know what I'm saying? It's not Florida. It's not upstate New York. It's again a little bit more moderate. So that's it. But not that. He, the main thing is he was looking for a place where land was cheap and there were no building codes. Everyone knows to build something in New Jersey, 1% is spent for the materials, 20% for the labor, and 79% for the government. And the 45 inspectors who have to approve, you know, everything. Yeah, so here's a place where I think he has 180 acres of land with a beautiful house that would anyone be happy with this house in New Jersey. I mean, it's spotlessly constantly built with these two big wood porches. 20-30 people for prasad on either side, overlooking a valley. And the whole cost is, you know, something a little over $200,000, $230,000. So not everyone can do it, but it's an interesting idea. Solve the economic problems. Now, all of a sudden, in one sense, they're wealthy. They're wealthy. I think the tax is like $400 a year or something. What? What? $400 a year tax. You know. So all of a sudden, I mean, you know, there's so many berries just growing out wild. Even if you're not eating anything, you can go to the 180 acres and eat berries. Organic. So it's interesting. It's what Prabhupada said for spiritual life. I'll be in York, Pennsylvania on Wednesday at two yoga teachers who were in India that knew Raghunath. I'll be giving a class. It's always nice to go to a place like that because New York, you know, there's 1,000 people speaking on every night. There's 30 people wanting to speak in every spot. In York, you know, hey, I may be the first monk that's ever. And I'm kind of a little nostalgic going back to York, Pennsylvania, because the main synagogue is Temple Beth Israel,
where my uncle, by Alexander Good, I tell the story, one of the four chaplains, was the rabbi. A little nostalgia. I also use that. I speak to people there. It's an easy opening. I can tell that good story. To solve the economic problem in that way, you know, place probably is almost paid for. It's just a little something. But pay for the place. Your tax is $400. And you have the land and all the food. Put in the wood stove. You have so much forest. Economic problem basically solved. And anything else you can make is profit. It's everyone is feeling now, in one sense, the economic oppression. It's like that. The salaries are not going up. The price of everything else is. And because Americans were spoiled, had been brought up in a land of prosperity. I think part of the hippie era is that everything was so damn cheap that, you know, people didn't have to work. I remember being in college, gas, 19 cents a gallon. Oh, the days when America exploited the rest of the world and we could live socially off of all the air. That's another thing that's happening. You know, America and, you know, England and things like that used to exploit the rest of the world. It's a little bit harder now. You know, education, other people, other countries are getting educated people. The standard of living is going down. I know when I grew up in America, and then we had one TV with like a 10-inch screen. And I remember Saturday morning, the ecstasy for me and my brothers, actually my brother at that time, the other brother wasn't born, to watch on Sunday morning Andy's Gang. Yeah, I'd wait till Marjorie remembers. But that's actually where I first heard the holy name, by the way. Because part of Andy's Gang, it was like a variety show for kids. They used to show this kind of a sequel thing called Rama of the Jungle. Not Indian. So I remember that's the first time I heard the holy names. You know. But I remember, you know, the family had one car. I remember you wouldn't buy a new car. My parents couldn't afford a new car. You know, now anybody, yeah, they buy a new car, right? Buy a new car. Something new. Anyway, it's just nice and for some people to do it and to try it. Solve the economic problem that way. And then interesting thing is 40 minutes from here, a godbrother of mine, kind of like, you know, if you meet him, he's like, and his wife, it's like the personification of sincerity. And he wanted to serve the Prabhupada's mission. That's all. There's no other consideration in their life. It's a very wonderful thing to see like that. For any good cause, but this is cause of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they have a place which is, the beauty is stunning. It's really stunning. He searched over so many states, 50 farms, and he already had a farm in Alachua, 10 acres. You know, and then beautiful. It's a little valley, practically a little valley, and on one side is a stream, and then goes for about 2 miles, it's just beautiful farmland. And then in between the stream and the farmland, it starts to go up into the mountains. It's very beautiful. And they have so much milk, they don't know what to do with it. So I went over there when I first came to encourage him. He'll come here today. Adi Karta, his name is. I met him in India. The sincere people. And his idea, he wants to give. He has that faith in the tradition that Prabhupada's giving. But he wants the whole package. Mostly, he's actually a preacher. He'll just go out every day. Other people do farming. So he does wherever he is. He brings people to Krishna conscious like that. Yeah, but it's you know, to see. And he told me, he's from London. But his heart is what? Krishna was a cowherd boy. Right? Got to take care of the cows. Krishna was a cowherd boy. You get that udipan, that inspiration. So, Charachandra invited me, and I knew that Kirti and Rajaraja would hear it. Be here. So why not come and encourage them? And it's nice for me because we have Niran Kuladipa here, Gopishore and Kishore Radha and their family. Okay. And of course, Kirti and Rajaraja, and some guy from Pennsylvania that read about him on the website, Mystery Man. Never met the devotees, but he's chanting 16 vows. Waltzed his wife. And then, he has seven kids. His youngest is 3 months, and they just got to admire him also. All his kids are very Krishna conscious and very, very blissful kids. Fulgent. Very, you can see when a child is grounded, when they're satisfied within themselves, there's a certain lack of movement. Like you could look up there, be sitting, taking food, and just sitting peacefully. So it's not for everyone, but got to give them credit. You know? Somehow, I don't know how he went to India with all his kids. I knew him in Govardhan. Somehow he still saves money. He's a financial analyst, so I just... Now he is. He went back to school. Anyway, it's just nice to be here. And I'm doing Krishna Katha every morning, every evening. I'm sitting out in the country. In Kentucky. And not a bad... Right near here is a school called Barriott. But Dr. Larry Shin is the president, 30 minutes from here. And it's super progressive Christian-based college, but which is non-denominational in terms of the enrollment. It was one of the first abolitionist movements came from there. And Dr. Larry Shin has a PhD in the Bhagavatam and Krishna's pastimes. He's the president. And he, if you look on Google, he studied the Hare Krishnas for 40 years. And he interviewed me in Vrindavan. Small world. So, anyway, maybe it's a little too long to travel on today, but I had to do it anyway because we had these technical difficulties with the Kamikaze Cardinal trying to get in. Okay, now the pastime. I was thinking something about this pastime, you know, and you've been all following it with me. So it's entering into Anjalila, and it's what Chaitanya physically entering into Anjalila, because he's walking from Vrindavan to Puri to concentrate on that mission. And we've discussed this many, many times. Now we'll watch also the consciousness of entering into Anjalila. And I just thought the first two stories are parallel, and they demonstrate that. Because you have the dog who takes shelter of the Parikram party. We discussed that. And simply
because the dog has taken shelter of a devotee and somehow or other has invoked the affection. When you take shelter of someone, when you are dependent on someone, when you take shelter in someone with that real mood of humility, it invokes mercy. It's just like the child, a young child, is very, very dependent. And they somehow invoke affection. So this is the process of bhakti, that you have to become innocent, you have to become simple, you have to become humble, you have to become sincere, and that's demonstrated with taking shelter. And that expresses a certain consciousness which invokes the devotion and love from whom you are taking shelter from. And you can't fake it, because people know. You know who's humble, who's dependent, who's in a mood of service. You know. And when that happens in a particular relationship, then it invokes this mercy. As Borijan Prabhu aptly said, I've been quoting several times, if you can melt the heart, if you can melt the heart of an advanced Vaishnava, then everything within the heart will come out. Take it. So the dog took shelter. The dog really took shelter. He needed food. He needed care. And somehow a devotee gave that. And because the dog actually took shelter. We see that even in America. There's practically more affection for dogs than there are for people. If they don't talk back. And they're loyal and dedicated. Our relationships are not like that. Give shelter to someone, and someone says, "What have you done to me today? I want more. And why don't you move this way? Why don't you move that way? And why don't you jump up? Why don't you jump down? Because my desires are changing. And why are you not moving according to my desires?" After speaking like this, I think I'm going to get a pet dog. So much easier than initiating. I'm beginning now speaking. I'm not going to criticize anymore people with dogs. They're just loving and they take shelter and they're so nice. Right? But the dog actually takes shelter. It invokes so much affection. So the story, what I've seen, so the dog takes shelter and achieves the highest just because it invoked the heart of a Vaishnava. When you invoke the heart of a Vaishnava, he wishes you well. And if he wishes you well, then Krishna wants to wish you well. If you get the Vaishnava's mercy, you get Krishna's mercy. But the other one, it's like the dog has no qualification. Right? Practically. That's why bhakti is considered, there's no material qualification. We've gone over this many times. There's a qualification of heart, of humility, of taking shelter. It's not a material qualification. That's not a material qualification. Just to put a little humor into my audience sitting here. Had this incredible assistant, Guru Pradeep, remembers him, James. Remember James?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I remember that. What? Yeah.
And James was very serious. He had this resonant voice. We go, yes. Anyway, to make a long story short, when I took him to the Boston Temple, he was having all these doubts because they were having on the Sankirtan Marathon Festival a glub jumping eating contest with people eating like 30, 40 glove chummings and, you know, vomit. Anyhow, it's like he's going, I don't know what to tell my mother. I remember the voice that I knocked out. Marge, I said, yes. Can I ask you a question? Yes. I do not know what my revered mother would think of me being in such an ashram of gluttony. You know? Guy fasted for 15 days and just read Bhagavad Gita because he wanted to realize Krishna constantly. Interesting. But then, you know, he told me, after he was complaining like that, he said, but I have one realization. I said, what is it? He said, there's no material qualification in Krishna consciousness. So, it's the dog. Just take shelter. But then, at the same time, the next story is Rupa Goswami. And what's the story of Rupa Goswami? He's the most qualified material. He's the most qualified. He's so intelligent and so capable, we cannot even imagine. If you read his, I told you this sometimes, I don't know if you've ever seen that the covey, the master of words, they have to be able to do these poetic puzzles. Basically, you got to fit poems into New York Times crossword puzzles and have them read the poem backwards and forwards the same way. That's just one of the skills you need. Write a poem, right? Backwards and forwards the same way. You write a poem, and it can be read backwards the same way. And sometimes diagonally also across, and it's amazing. They're masters of wordcraft. And he was a big government officer. He would be probably equal to the, because it was a monarchy, it would be like the Prime Minister of England. You know, it's like the Queen, but there's the Prime Minister. He was practically the prime minister of the country because, I mean, you know, look at Bengal. Bengal probably right now has about 200 million people, you know, so it's like, even though it's a state in India. And so he was so qualified, but his success was his humility, his dependence. He was very humble, and he never felt that these qualities were mine, because in one sense they're not. We're having a discussion about agency. And then someone sent me something about, you know, the super soul. You know, we can't do anything on our own. We're dependent on the super soul. You know, it's some kind of thing like that. So all the, you know, the things that we have and the inspiration to use them is in the realm of karma. Mostly it's in the realm of karma, and that can change because karma is temporary. So it's not inherently part of us. So someone has realized he doesn't take that credit because he knows it's a gift. If you're intelligent, your next life you may not be intelligent. If you're strong, next life you may not be strong. So he was very, very humble. He never really looked at himself. He kind of understood his abilities, but didn't claim proprietorship over them. So he was very, very humble. And that was expressed in his mood to serve. Because when you're not humble, you don't enter another person's world. You use those abilities to control the environment for your own desires. You don't enter into another person's world. When you're humble, you may have so many qualities,
but they will not be used for your enjoyment. They'll be used to serve God and serve those who are serving God, and you'll humbly enter into their world. I remember when Prabhupada started the Bhaktivedanta Institute of scientists, and I met Sadaputta, one of the top scientists, when he was studying for his PhD in Cornell. And I have a good, and I never met someone so intelligent in my life. When he began to speak, it just blew my mind. I just like, wow. It was lucid, it was clear. So brilliant. You know, and then there's other people. But I remember when they had the first scientific conference in the Gurukul in Vrindavan. There used to be a hall downstairs. Not now, they have all kinds of offices. It was one big hall. A lot of times we spend money to do things that make things worse. The building was made with a big, beautiful hall. It's a grand hall. They made all these little offices. A big hall. And they were having a scientific conference. The scientists, after the conference, in their suits and ties, came to see Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, give them chairs. It's in the room. Give them chairs. Prabhupada said, no, we're just your disciples. No, you're respectable scientists. But they didn't have the abhiman, the pride. They had abilities, but it was Krishna's, it was for Krishna. So Rupa Goswami, even though he was like incredibly brilliant, he was such a humble person that he invoked the affection of all the devotees because he took shelter of all of them. Never wanted to brag and recite his poetry in front of everyone. You know, we have to check our own consciousness. How much we have to pratishta and puja, distinction and worship. How do we view others? What's our attitude of service? How much in our mind are we just looking at the world as ours? A good test for that is a big feast. Who runs in early to get the first seat? And who goes in the kitchen to serve? Who's in anxiety? I may not get my cheese sub cheese. And who serves everyone else and doesn't really care? Just depends on Krishna. Thinking of others before themselves. The thing that annoys me the most is, you know, in India, when they cook, they are so expert that they never waste. So they'll, you know, they'll make enough for everybody, but they'll know how much to be served. So the beautiful feast, and they'll serve it in a way, even psychologically, you know, that every, you know, like all of a sudden at the end, a cheese subji will come out. And you'll be happy to get a little bit. They can't afford to put Govardhan Hill of cheese subject on everybody's plate. They're so expert. And then even if 100 more people come, they'll just go in and cook rice and serve half the amount and serve it in a way you'll still feel satisfied. You know, they'll have a quarter of a bucket of chutney for 200 people. Everybody get a little chutney. It'll be okay. Rest in a couple, well, everybody may not get enough. They'll cook 5 buckets of chutney. It'll be wasted. They don't have that sense that it's a system, how they do it. But what annoys me more than anything else is the devotee, usually a position of authority somewhere, sitting in the front when the bucket of cheese subji comes out, having to serve it, pick out the cheese. Because they also don't make just cheese subject. You know, there's a few pieces floating there. It's okay. because they had to cook the cauliflower so deliciously that you don't mind. So what is the consciousness? And Srupa Goswami, he gets the blessings, and with the blessings, he's able to use that beyond his capabilities. That's called empowerment. You're an instrument for God in a way that you can go even beyond your capabilities. A very beautiful thing, empowerment. It appears that way. So he was revered and loved. And because of that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave Rupa Goswami his heart. Now, I explained this before. You give your heart not easily. We all want to give our heart, but we don't give our heart. Why? And I said, if someone has your heart, they can serve you better than anyone else. They can also exploit you more. So you only give a heart to one who is trusting, and it really expresses that it's not about me. But as soon as a person has that consciousness, whatever they get will be used for them, even if it exploits you. And by the power of rationalization, they can't even see it. If someone is humble, you trust that they won't exploit you. And if they want to serve you, you'll give them your heart. So Rupa Goswami had the heart and therefore understood the depth of Lord Chaitanya's desires. He understood the very depth of Lord Chaitanya's desires. Wow, Kirti, you're really wielding a lot of power today. Just like a snap of the finger, one of the audience is gone.
Okay. Sorry, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay. So, what happens is he understands this Anjali, this inner mission that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God wanting to be his devotee. And being a devotee doesn't mean a particular dress, a particular institution. It means a feeling in the heart of love and devotion. And he wants that to the highest degree. And that he has that sense, that the mood of Radharani, and he needs to cultivate it and nourish it by poetics. So now what happens is, I described it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the Ratha Yatra, he's chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, he's looking for some nurturing of that sentiment, like some poetry that expresses it, so he finds some poetry that expresses it, but the context of the poetry is mundane. So Lord Chaitanya understands that sentiment. Rupa Goswami hears and understands the sentiment. No one else understood. They got confused by the context. And therefore writes a poem with the proper context. And now Lord Chaitanya comes and we'll read what happens. So at that time, Chaitanya meant to, and when he saw the leaf pushed onto the roof and saw the verse, he began to read it. After reading the verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was overwhelmed with ecstatic love. Because it was the context and the mood. At that very time, Rupa Goswami returned, having finished bathing in the sea. Seeing the Lord, Rupa Goswami fell flat in the courtyard to offer obeisances. The Lord slapped him mildly in love and spoke as follows. My heart is very confidential. How did you know my mind in this way? After saying this, he firmly embraced Rupa Goswami. Ch- Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the verse and showed it to Sarupa Damodar for him to examine. Then the Lord questioned him, how could Rupa Goswami have understood my heart? The Lord asked, Sarupa Damodar replied, I can understand that you have already showed your causeless mercy upon him. No one otherwise can understand this meaning. I can therefore guess that previously you bestowed upon him your causeless mercy. What is that mercy? His inner mood. What he really wants. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, Rupa Goswami met me at Prayag. Knowing him to be a suitable person, I naturally bestowed my mercy upon him. And thereupon bestowed upon him my transcendental potency. Now you should also give him instructions. In particular, instruct him in transcendental mellows. Sri Damodar said, as soon as I saw the unique composition of this verse, I could immediately understand that you bestowed upon him your special mercy. Phalena phalakaranam anumiyate. By seeing the a result, one can understand the cause of that result. The river Ganges, flowing in the heavenly planets, is full of golden lotus flowers, and we, the residents of those planets, eat the stems of those lotus flowers. Thus we are very beautiful, more so than the inhabitants of any other planet. This is due to the law of cause and effect. For if one eats food in the mode of goodness increases the beauty of his body. So I'm out here in the country, in Kentucky, getting that delicious raw milk right out of Krishna's cows. And becoming more and more beautiful every day. By eating the good food. Said with the purport, we'll read the next class about eating properly and what it does to the consciousness. And you can see that. You can actually see that. We have to be a little careful with what has been the traditional Krishna conscious diet. Although, when I first came, you know, it was rice, dal, and chapatis, and then you got the sweets on Sunday. But you have to be careful, otherwise our diet, without a little thought, could cause blood pressure, diabetes, especially a sannyasi. And every place he goes, people want to see him the best. But the regular standard, you know, chapatis, very Indians eat, right? Get some chapatis, a little sabji. You know, they don't eat that much oil. They don't eat that much oil. The traditional diet, right? Some good Vrijvasi rotis. I have one place in Vrindavan, 10 minutes from the temple. I'm out in the woods, a little farmer. When I come, Vrijvasi rotis, thick. Cooked by people who have done this for generations and generations. No rolling pins, just the hands. Put on that fire. It's so funny. Simple villager, very poor. They eat better than the wealthy people in New York. Pick a little bear fruit. Unlimited bear fruit grows in Vrindavan. You can have as much as you want. They're like little apples, but not as sweet, but really good. Just a little pile of that. So I'm here in my country Bob. Although, being a typical New Yorker, I haven't left my room yet. Today I'll go out and see what the wilderness is and risk my life
being attacked by ticks and poison ivy and all the other dangerous things in the forest. But the mothers are not worried, and their kids are running all around. You know, why should I be afraid? A little bit. Okay, any questions? Every class I give, sometimes, you know, I'm in different places.
Maharaj?
Yeah.
Maharaj? It's Mooney.
Yeah.
Man, just hearing all the fun with all my old friends there. It's gosh, I wish I was there. It sounds great.
Hey, Mooney, just seeing all the fun with all his friends. I was thinking too, you would have really had a great time out here. You know, but it's quite a distance from Boston. I flew down to Lexington, and they picked me up. I'll stay on a day or two more than the people that are leaving. Yeah, good.
Well, cool. For deepest. Sorry, excuse me.
Yeah. One second. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Did you say 1 second to me, Mark?
What's that?
I'm sorry. I thought you said 1 second. I didn't hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I had a question too, Marge, if there's time, but...
Yeah, sure.
When you were talking about, the way in which whatever our talents or qualities are, you know, we need to cultivate this deep dependence on God.
Yeah.
And you also gave some nice examples of devotees like Charuchandraji who they're taking some risk to try to serve, and that puts you in a position of dependence, too.
Yeah.
One thing that I was wondering if you could shed some light on is, you know, the model that maybe we were introduced to when we joined the ashram and stuff was just that you literally make yourself materially dependent on God because you give everything up, and you're just living with very little, and you're trying to serve, and it's difficult. And in that sense, It's pretty easy, at least maybe it's not easy, but it's easier to cultivate a mood of dependence. But it seems like most of us are going to be in a situation where we have our families and we have our homes, and in that sense, we don't seem to be in danger or we don't seem to be in situations that force us to remember we're dependent on Krishna. And I was wondering, do you have a meditation you could suggest, or do you think it's something like just trying to find the will of our guru in our circumstance and remember that that's what we have to give ourselves to? You know, is there a certain kind of theme or meditation you could advise to
I would say this. If we focus on Dharma, we're going to have to be dependent. You know, because Dharma means it's not a material calculation, it's a spiritual calculation. I think the Bhagavad Gita, the first verse, shows that. Because the Kurus had the material advantage, but the Pandavas had Krishna. And the conclusion was where there's Krishna, there's auspicious opulence, victory, morality, I have no doubt. So, I think every ashram has a challenge. You know, even the fact of giving to charity for a grihastha, you know. And you see some people that, you know, they don't have much money, but they believe it's their duty, and they give some charity. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like a dependence on Krishna. And I think any time you do your duty, you're risking your control with faith that something good will come, and people who do that get that faith. You know what I'm saying? They get that faith. And a lot of times I see and a higher percentage of time than not, devotees who have really a lot of money, people with that faith of charity. You know what I'm saying? With that faith of charity.
Because, you know, everyone, it doesn't matter where they are, unless they're exceptionally detached, money is control. And giving up your money is giving up your control. Because the more money you have, it appears, the more you can move the environment to your desires and senses. Right? And what I lament when I see in the Grihastha ashram, or any ashram, what I lament in any ashram, is the American disease. And the American disease is, as soon as you get more money, you increase your standard of living. So I see when everyone, like, popped out of the, you know, the brahmachari ashram or whatever it is and had to get jobs and had a little, they were somehow making it, you know? And then when they got more, but at each stage, 80% of the people are in financial pressure. No matter how much money they make, they manage, like Sachi Sutta, you know, he lives in a simple neighborhood, very simple neighborhood, and he became a millionaire. But normally what a person would do is they'd move to an exclusive estate that satisfies all their things, and then they're always in the same place. He stayed in the same place he was. You know, didn't really increase his standard of living. So what increased? What increased was his ability to give charity. So, I mean, that's just, but I would just say, dharma, when you actually do what's right, and the more you do what's right, and the more you are sacrificing generally, I don't know if that's that, but you can sacrifice your control. You know, so I guess that, you know, Raja and Kirti, I wouldn't say everyone has to do it. It depends on your proclivity. It depends on your faith. It depends on your detachment. But, you know, he gave up his job. You know, and he came here. He's like dependent. So I have to say, in terms of Von Ashram, our level of dependency depends on our modes of nature. The Brahmin is fully dependent, really. A Brahmin should be fully dependent. I mean, a good example, really, is your Guru Maharaj.
Yeah.
He's a Brahmin. He's dependent on Krishna. He stayed in the ashram. I mean, it's rare how many people can do that with kind of a faith and three kids and so many things.
And he actually has material qualifications.
Yeah,
and he actually has material qualifications. He could have gotten a job somewhere. It's not like he has to force everything.
So that kind of faith is there. So
yeah.
People have that. Kshatri has a little bit less faith. This, I guess, the wisdom of hanging around sadhus and vrindavanas, I guess, was great. Kshatri has a little bit less faith. He has to have some faith. Kshatriya has to have some control. Has to have some control. Vaishya has to have some control. Because they have to buy something and then sell it for more than it's worth. And then lie to them. It's okay. And then technically, like in the background of the sutra, he needs to depend on people. There's different levels of dependence, too. So in this age, it's going to be very hard, except for the minimal people.
Marsh, is your phone messing up? Can you hear me okay, Marsh? There's like heavy static on the phone. Do you hear me all right?
I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, it just went away. Sorry. Okay, I heard everything you said. It was just
I mean, what do you expect? I'm in Kentucky. The iPhone had a big introduction last week. But you know, also too, you know, the Southern culture, there's something about it too. Raja says when you go to anybody's store, you know, sometimes people, he went to one store and the guy fixed his machine. He said, "No, it's not. We don't charge for that."
Yeah, it's a different world.
We don't charge for that. You know, we sell machines here. You know, we don't charge for that. That's what and he said several times it came that people did a good job, and he tried to give them, like, more money because they did such a good job, they'd never accept it. They said, "No, how much is the bill?"
And I said, we know that's more than the bill. And he says, all the people also say, they always introduce themselves by their first and last name. Of course, every place has its good and the bad. Every, you know, I mean, Lilith the Deep got lost in the wilderness there. And some guy came out with a gun and said, hey, boy, what are you doing here in my land? He came here a little traumatized, but we calmed him down.
Man, wish I could have got a video of that.
I'll tell you. Okay, I got to go on for the function. Adi Karki is coming today. He's going to do kirtan up to the. And this Jambavan with his sons. It's like the family works. The kids are beautiful. They're Krishna conscious. And they're seven, you know, and what? And he hasn't finished yet. He got married. She when he's 18, he's when he's 20. And I made kind of like a joke with him. I said, hey, Hindu Dharma, you know, people, if it's not people like you, the country's going to come overrun with Muslims. Produce. Just joking, of course. But he's producing the kids, yeah. And he came in with a three-month kid, and the oldest daughter takes care of the younger, and the older son takes care of the rest. And they're all engaged in devotional service, and they're helping him with the fire yoga, and they all know the, you know, it's pretty nice. It's kind of, it's, you know, everybody has their contribution. I guess he has his. Okay, I'm getting wild. I have to get down. I have an audience today, so you know any time the frustrated stand-up comedian comes out, so that's when I stop. Okay, I have to get to the function. Okay, all right.
Thanks, Marsh. Terrible.
Once you call it to yourself, get this new time.